Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey, everybody knows Weber grills. I've been using Weber grills my whole life, and check it out. They got a pellet grill, the Weber Searwood pellet grill. Now, with a pellet grill, you can smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. You can go from low and slow, okay, on smoke boost mode, or crank this thing all the way to a heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full great sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood pellet grill.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester, joined as always by Mike Tagliere. We're going to take an early look at 2020 fantasy football rankings. At the end of the show, we'll talk about some playoff predictions as well. We're joined by Justin Boone, lead fantasy analyst at The Score. He's on Twitter at Justin Boone. I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro, and Tags is at Mike Tagliere NFL. Justin, thanks for coming to the show. How's it going?
It's going great, guys. I finally got that first place finish in the in-season accuracy contest at Fantasy Pros. So
yes, you did.
I was starting to feel like I'm a Bills fan, and I was starting to feel like the Bills a little bit, right? Every year I was like in that top five or so close, and I started to say, you know what, maybe I'm just not going to get there. And there is something to be said for, you know, the consistency, but man, it feels so good finally getting that the monkey off my back and getting that gold trophy.
Congratulations. That is awesome.
Hey, and also, by the way, people have seen that. Like, if you guys follow us on Twitter, you've seen that, us congratulating Justin and Fantasy Pros account and all that stuff. But what you probably didn't see is that we have a Fantasy Pros Invitational Dynasty League. And
I don't want to talk about it. Come on, Tags.
It is a deep league. It's a two-quarterback league. We start so many different players, and it's such a fun league to play in with a bunch of sharp guys. And Bobby was in the final against Justin, and Justin just he kind of put him over his knee and gave him the all 1-2, and
Let me say, though, I mean, Bobby had a ton of injuries. He had a couple guys get hurt before the game. And in game, he lost a couple guys that week. So I kind of got lucky because Bobby was...
I still would have lost, though, you know?
He also played Mike Boone.
You were dominating that league all year, and it was just... But that's what the fantasy playoffs are, right? You just try to get in. I think Pat Fitzmaurice put out a pretty good tweet about this around the time the fantasy playoffs started, which is... You're doing what you can do. You're improving your chances to get into the fantasy playoffs. Once you're there, anything can happen in single elimination, right? And I got lucky in the final, I think.
I don't know about lucky, man. You had a great team as well. But, dude, I scored freaking 500 more points than any other team in the league. This was the freaking year, and it didn't work. All right, let's jump into the draft rankings. And, again, we're talking 2020. It's time to start getting excited. And, you know, I just want today's show to kind of have a feel of three buddies sitting around talking about rankings the way that you guys would like to do with your buddies. Now, we're going to go a little bit more in depth than you guys, I would imagine, probably could. But I just want to start at the top with running backs, okay? So we got CMC obviously going number one. After him, who's the number two pick on the board? Is it Michael Thomas, Saquon Barkley, Dalvin Cook, Zeke? I could see any four of these guys going number two. Tags, why don't you start us?
I mean, Saquon Barkley is pretty, I would say he's one that I would definitely consider there. There's now some unknown factors with the Giants in terms of the head coach they just hired and not knowing anything about him, because traditionally we can always look at a head coach and say, okay, this is what he traditionally does, but we can't do that with him. But Saquon Barkley, this franchise is obviously built around him. They do have a lot of options in the passing game with Darius Slayton taking a step forward, Sterling Shepard hopefully being healthy, Golden Tate still being there. I don't know if they dump him with a salary. Evan Ingram. We have not seen all these guys healthy on the field at once, and while some people may say that it hurts Saquon because there's only so much production to go around, you can also say that Saquon isn't going to see as many stacked boxes. They should be able to help rebuild that offensive line. I think Barkley is the safest number two pick. I don't necessarily think that There's an argument to be made for a couple players there, but I think Saquon would be number two for me.
Justin, that's who I've got number two as well.
Yeah, I do too. And that's what you're going to see. At this point, when we're doing these rankings, it is crazy early to be doing these rankings, but it's a great exercise to go through it. I learned a lot when I was going through them, you know, breaking players down, guys who are going to be free agents, all that sort of stuff. But what I also found, there's a lot of data we're going to be combing over in the next months, almost the next year before the season comes back around. But I had a lot of guys that were kind of grouped together that were very difficult to differentiate. And this is one of them. When you're looking at Barkley and Dalvin Cook and Ezekiel Elliott, I have those three, two, three, four. You could really place them anyway, in my opinion. I think Barkley is just the guy that I'm most confident when he's healthy in his talent. He's a guy I think can produce for himself, doesn't need the offense around him to be doing that much. He can still get it done. And we saw this year that he was hurt a big chunk of this season. He played through the injury. I think it impacted him.
Especially in the passing game, it impacted him, right?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a better version of Barkley next year. And maybe you'll be able to get him a little cheaper. Maybe you'll be able to get him in the middle of the first round instead of with that second overall pick.
I think Barkley's actually closer to Christian McCaffrey at number one than he is to Dalvin Cook at number three. I think Cook and Elliott, you could flip-flop them, but you know, because McCaffrey has a little bit of concern too with getting the new head coach. Who knows if they're going to use him 100% of the snaps. This guy might just think, okay, we need to do a little bit more load management. Now, I don't know why you would do that, but you never know with a head coach. I'm still taking CMC number one overall, but what I'm saying is I don't think that it's the slam dunk that everybody thinks it is, because Barkley's just that dang good.
It's just rare to have a running back finish number one back-to-back years, but it's all about the process, right, and saying what is the most likely of outcomes, and it's the same reason that we went to Todd Gurley in 2018. It's just, you know, trying to figure this stuff out is the funnest part, but, I mean, like, let's talk about, like, because those guys that you're going to get there, it's almost like you're going to take who lands to you. Like, if you have the fourth pick, you're going to, the player's just going to kind of fall at that point, but somebody that I wanted to talk to you guys about that I've been catching a lot of flack for, because I put out my early rankings, and I have Joe Mixon as my RB6, and I'd be willing to take him at the end of the first round. This is a lot of people are telling me that, okay, yeah, he showed a little bit towards the end of the year. No, he didn't just show a little bit.
No, a lot of it. He was the freaking best.
No, from week 8 through the remainder of the season, he was the number 4 running back behind only Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, and Ezekiel Elliott. So why can we even expect possibly even more? Is like, you look at this Bengals team and you say, okay, Cordy Glenn was missing the first 8 games. They lost first round offensive tackle Jonah Williams all year to shoulder surgery. Clint Bowling retired at just 30 years old, their starting guard. There were other injuries on the offensive line. AJ Green wasn't there. John Ross missed half the season. They have Auden Tate now coming in. Zach Taylor.
They had Ryan Finley as their quarterback for a while, man.
And this is almost like a Buck situation where it's like, we have a defense that's so incredibly bad that it's going to force them to throw passes, and that's going to open up this offense to scoring opportunities. And Joe Mixon, Zach Taylor kind of moved, as the year went on, he kind of moved more and more towards him as a workhorse. So Joe Mixon, I have a bold prediction article coming out, actually, I think in 2 days I'm going to put it out. One of my bold predictions is that Joe Mixon finishes as the RB1 in fantasy football.
I don't think it's not that crazy. I mean, talent-wise, he's a top 5 guy. He's just in that bad situation. The crazy thing about him this year was in the first half of the year, he averaged 15 touches per game. In the second half of the season, I don't know what changed, but that ballooned to 24 touches per game.
And it could be more because they weren't using him in the passing game all that much. He could do it.
I think he only had fewer than 18 carries like once in those final 9 games, something like that. It was just the volume went up. Hopefully that's here to stay. I agree. We should see more from that Bengals offense. Should get an upgrade at quarterback. Even if it's a rookie coming in, I think we'd expect at least the same, maybe even better than what we were getting at quarterback there. Offensive line, like you talked about, tag. So I really like it. This was another tough stretch for me. From 5 or 6 to 11, I have all those guys so close in my projections. And I wanted to put Mixon up there. I'm glad you had the guts to do it, Tags. But I have him down at 10. But I think all those guys are very, very close in that range.
Yeah, I've got him at 10. I've got Jacobs at 11. I just can't see putting him over Aaron Jones, who was the number 2 fantasy running back this year. By the way, Tags, called that. You called that in the preseason. Congratulations on that one. Alvin Kamara, Nick Chubb with Kareem Hunt likely leaving in free agency. Derrick Henry, Leonard Fournette. There's just, you know, you're right. There's those 11 guys, and then after that, it's a pretty sizable drop-off.
Yeah, Justin, where are you at on Derrick Henry? Obviously, he finished the year strong. I think people are forgetting about what happened over the first half of the season because he was not someone that you really cared to have on your roster. A lot of people were trading him away, but he obviously picks it up as the year goes on. This has been a tradition with him, but we don't know where he's going to be next year. You know, his contract is up. He's an unrestricted free agent. We don't see the franchise tag used on running backs anymore. It rarely happens. So, you know, if Derrick Henry, if he enters free agency, is there a spot we could see him going? Do you think the Titans do franchise tag him? And where would you draft him if he remains in Tennessee in 2020?
I think he's going to be at that 1-2 turn. I've never been as high on Henry as a lot of people. I know this is the second straight year where he's come on when it mattered most for fantasy, right? In the second half of the season. And that's the recency bias of it, right? Everyone just remembers that. So he's not involved as much as a pass catcher. And that's hard for me to get over. And I know he's been so dominant in the second half of the season.
Yeah, Derrick Henry, you know, you look at him, first nine games of the season, 14 fantasy points per game. That's behind Mark Ingram, David Johnson. It's just ahead of Tevin Coleman. He was the number 14 running back in football. And yeah, at the end of the season, they did use him in that way. But, you know, Ryan Tannehill was throwing like 20 passes per game. Do we really expect that to continue next season?
I mean, I would have to think they're going to continue to build that defense because that defense does need some pieces. Like I personally believe they've screwed up a couple draft picks here and there and players that I wasn't as high on. It's not to say that they can't work, but Derrick Henry needs a positive game script because if this team, let's say if Ryan Tannehill regresses, if they sign him to an extension or, you know, actually a new contract because he's actually going to be an unrestricted free agent as well. I expect them to get something done with Ryan Tannehill, but if he regresses, this offense isn't going to move as well. It won't be as efficient. And if they weren't in a winning situation as much as they've been over the second half of the season, you have to wonder where Derrick Henry like fits in because he is a guy that's going to see a max of like two or three targets per game. I know they said coming into this year, we're going to use him more in the passing game. And they started, when the year started, it was like two or three targets per game. And it was like, okay, this is fine. But then he had a few drops and there were a few things in there that they were just like, no. And then they just went away from altogether. And then it's like in the playoffs, it comes, they get him one screen pass. I don't care if he drops balls. He should be used in the screen game. You need to get him in the open field and let him run. I don't know. It's really tough because like when you're drafting a running back at this point, you want him to be game script proof. You want to be able to put him in your lineup every single week and expect, you know, if not RB1 production, at least close to that. And Derrick Henry, he just wasn't that running back over the first half of the season.
Tags talked about it. In the first half of the season, he topped 90 rushing yards in just one game, right? Like, you can't have a lot of confidence in a guy that's not being used in the passing game that doesn't really show up in the first half of the season. So I still view him as a low-end RB1. There's going to be people out there that I think are probably going to have him in their top five, which I think is crazy. But I think what we can agree on is I would be shocked if he leaves Tennessee. Like, that is their offense. There's just no way that they can let him leave, whatever they have to do, whether it is the franchise tag, like Tags mentioned.
Man, he was so great last week. That was so much fun watching him against the Patriots. We're going to pause for just a moment. I want to say congratulations to Joseph from Ontario for winning that full-size signed Kenny Golladay Lions helmet last month. And of course, we had that contest thanks to Pristine Auction. If you guys check out Pristine Auction, you are going to love what you find. First of all, go ahead and sign up. It's free to sign up. Enter the registration code Fantasy Pros, all one word. That's going to get you $5 off, and it's going to tell them we're sending people their way. That way we can keep doing these giveaways like we've had going on all year. Right now I'm eyeing this Fran Tarkenton signed Vikings football. He's like one of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time. I can get this bad boy for like $30. There's always great values to find on Pristine Auction, and everything is guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources. Check out pristineauction.com. That's P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com. Guys, we need to talk about Austin Eckler. He finishes the RB4 this year, and he wasn't even the starter for half the season. Melvin Gordon, obviously a free agent. I don't think he's coming back to Los Angeles. So Austin Eckler, starting running back for the Los Angeles Chargers. Is he a top 12 fantasy running back?
Yeah. I mean, if we know that, I can't say for sure that he's not going to be on the team next year, that Melvin Gordon's not, but I've been going through stats like now that I'm able to. Did you guys know Austin Eckler had 993 receiving yards this year? That was the fourth most all-time for running backs.
Man, that is really impressive.
I thought it was even more shocking that after Gordon came back, when you're talking about the final eight games of the season, the second half of the year, Eckler was still the RB10 in half PPR. Gordon was good. Like, after that first little stretch when he came back, the holdout was silly, obviously. He came back, had a couple awful games, needed to get back in game shape there. And then he played really well, too. In the second half of the season, he was the RB7 in half PPR. So they both were producing. I'm a little bit concerned that with Eckler, that they're going to have somebody else in there with him. But even when it was Gordon, he was able to produce. So whether it's Justin Jackson, I think it might be more likely that they go out and draft somebody, that sort of thing. But I kind of think that would happen if they let Gordon go, which I also expect is going to happen there. But I have Eckler at RB15, but part of that is because we're trying to factor in just the uncertainty around the situation, right? I don't want to move him up into that low-end RB1 range yet, but if Gordon goes, if they don't draft anyone else, then yeah, for sure he's going to be in that top 12 for me. But right now I see him more as that high-end RB2.
Now, real quick though, guys, I like that you brought him up, Bobby. So here's the question. Let's pretend that Phillip Rivers is not back with the team. That changes things, right? Like, we saw what happened with James Conner in the run game in Pittsburgh when Ben Roethlisberger went out. And the competent quarterback play, it's something that I think I learned from this year, is that don't take it for granted and what it can mean for an offense.
He can be bad, but he's still competent, yeah.
I don't know who the quarterback would be for the Chargers. Are they going to roll with Tyrod Taylor? I mean, it's crazy to think that Phillip Rivers wouldn't be under the center for the Chargers, but if he's not, and let's pretend it is Tyrod Taylor or it's a rookie.
Maybe Tom Brady.
We have to... Oh, that's possible, I guess.
It has been thrown out, yeah.
But would you feel as good about Eckler if they were rolling with a quarterback, that, let's say that a non-proven quarterback, somebody that you don't necessarily feel great about?
Maybe not as good, but I don't know that Phillip Rivers was playing that great this season. Like, I don't know that the drop-off, there was a lot of times where he was hurting that offense. Now, the question is, Phillip Rivers was checking down a whole heck of a lot, so is that going to affect, you know, Eckler's receiving numbers there? But I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's a team that moves up in the draft and tries to get one of the quarterbacks near the top this year, because they kind of have to.
Yep, I think so as well. You know, Eckler's in that tier. I think it's a pretty clear tier. Tell me if you guys think I'm missing anyone or someone doesn't belong. Miles Sanders, Eckler, Kenyon Drake, Chris Carson, Todd Gurley, Melvin Gordon, maybe Le'Veon Bell. What do you guys think?
I think Gurley belongs ahead of those guys. I have Gurley at 11 right now.
He was very good at the end of the year. Like,
yeah, I mean, Sean McVay said basically he was trying to protect Gurley from like whatever he was trying to do, and then he's like, you know what, I have to unleash him, and Gurley's been fine. So I think the offense works better when Gurley's going, when they have him in that workhorse role. I don't think that they work well as a timeshare. So, I mean, I'm not saying that Gurley's going to return to the RB1 that he was, but putting him in that borderline RB1, RB2 range, that's where I kind of feel like he's at.
Yeah, I have him sort of that high-end RB2, mid RB2 range. The only thing for me, he really lived off the touchdowns this year. Like, the yardage wasn't, and it's just about expectations, right? Anyone that's looking for Gurley to be that high-end RB1, it's just not going to happen anymore, I don't think. So as long as you're adjusting the expectations and seeing him as an RB2 now, I think he's a fine RB2 on your roster. I kind of just worry about that Rams offense as a whole now. I think that holds him back a little bit, and he was maybe a little bit lucky that those touchdowns helped lift his fantasy value a bit this season.
All right, guys, let's move on outside that. I guess you would call it a third tier. Is there one running back, or maybe two, that you're especially excited about? There's one that I've got right here at 19 at the very top of that fourth tier that I absolutely love next year. I'm seeing him at ECR 36. I'll get to him in a second. Tags, why don't you go first? Who do you like from this next range?
I mean, it's really tough. I'm not knowing the situations, because I think there's so many running backs coming in, and it's a very talented running back class where some of these guys that are fringe that we're talking about in this tier, they're going to lose their jobs. It's going to happen. Like, guys like DeAndre Swift are going to come in. They're going to steal those. Some other guys have declared for the draft that are going to come in, and they have to have landing spots, right? So some of these guys that are on fringe, like maybe a Devonta Freeman, maybe he loses his job. Maybe Kansas City is going to draft a running back, and whoever Kansas City drafts, if they draft a running back in the top three rounds, I'm going to put him in my top 15. I'm just going to automatically do that. So that's going to be a thing. So there's so many like variables, but I want to talk about guys that I'm like really unsure about how to rank. Like, I don't know how to rank Miles Sanders. I'm going to be fully honest about that. I don't know how to rank Raheem Mostert, because we have small sample sizes of these guys doing well. And
Mostert's the guy I was going to talk about. Like, if he's the full-time starter in San Francisco, he's a top 10 back, man.
Right. I believe in these running backs. I absolutely believe in their ability. What I don't believe in is their coaches sticking with them if times get hard. And it's like, do you want to invest a draft pick on someone that could lose that starting job just because he fumbles or he has a bad game and someone else steps up and plays well. That's the question. Justin, like, where are you at on these guys?
Well, I think with Mostert, the thing that we learned is just you want to invest in that Shanahan running game. We knew that, but you want to invest in it all the way down to the third or fourth string guy, because we saw basically every running back have a moment in that offense. Even Jeff Wilson came in and had a couple touchdowns, right? So I think that's the lesson here is you always want to roster those running backs. I'm with you that I'm not sure where to put Mostert. I have him just on that fringe RB2, just kind of borderline RB2 range. It's really nice to see a guy that has all that talent, that flashes on special teams, finally get an opportunity. And we know in this rushing attack, anybody that gets a chance can deliver. But the problem with that is they're very quick to move on to the next guy if they want to. So I have him in that range. I think depending on what happens here in the playoffs, we could always see an injury or something occur. It's a running back position, so could see somebody go down in the next couple weeks here. But I would have Mostert as the lead back there, and I would be willing to take him because, yeah, if he hits, you're talking about a guy that has RB1 upside that you're getting in that range.
I mean, he had 6 yards per carry, right? We saw Devontae Freeman be the RB1 in Shanahan's offense, and Mostert's, I think he's just as good. You watch him play, he's a really dang good football player. No, he wasn't getting all the touches at the end of the season, but he was pretty awesome. He's a guy that I would like. Now, Tags, is there somebody else that you're fond of? David Johnson?
No. I'm guessing that Kenyon Drake's going to be back in Arizona, and I don't know what Arizona's going to do with David Johnson's contract. So right now, I'm assuming that Kenyon Drake is the starter there. That's basically how I'm rolling with this. I don't even have David Johnson in my... Where the heck do I have David Johnson? I don't even know where I have him in my rankings, to be honest. That's how low he is. Like, he's not draftable as far as I'm concerned right now. I was looking at this, like, David Johnson was just not, he wasn't good this year. He broke 11 tackles on 130 touches this year. That's,
I mean, he was playing hurt.
Well, that was over like the last game and a half, maybe. But among 50 running backs with 50 touches, the only running backs who were worse in terms of like breaking tackles per touch were Kalen Ballage and Bo Scarborough. That's not great.
Yeah, but I mean, he was the number 8 fantasy football running back through 8 weeks.
It was very volume-based.
Right, but if he gets the job back again, he's an RB1.
How can they give him that job back, though, with the way Drake played?
Because he was hurt, and maybe he comes back and he looks better.
My thought, no, David Johnson's like 29 years old. He's not going to get better. David Johnson, maybe they turn him into like the slot receiver. He was a receiver in college. So what about with Larry Fitzgerald likely retiring? If David Johnson, because I don't see them getting rid of that contract. It's just too much money. But they do want Drake, and Drake was fantastic. But David Johnson being in like somewhat of a hybrid role as like a running back wide receiver, that would be interesting. So we have to see how that plays out. But one player that really turned it on over the stretch, and I mean, the draft is going to determine this a lot because it's one of those places that we've been talking about. Ronald Jones looked good. He looked really good down the stretch. And if they don't draft a running back, I'm gonna be in on him because I can't avoid him for whatever reason. He's a good running back, and I would imagine that Bruce Arians has to wake up at some point and say, we need to run the ball. We can't rely on Jameis to throw the ball, 600, 700 times in a season.
For me, that's going to be completely dependent on ADP. If he's going to continue to go late in drafts, then sure, right? He's not going to go in the late rounds, but I just mean later than some of these other backs we've talked about, and he should, and if that happens, then I will take him, but I'm not going to pay up for Jones. There was too many times where we got let down by that backfield. So it's a scary proposition for me to spend any kind of decent draft capital to get somebody there.
For me, I think of Jones in kind of the same way as I did with Mark Ingram last year, where it's like, okay, he's probably going to be the starter in a very good offense, and we'll see what his role is. But he's got the upside to be an RB1, and Mark Ingram did end up being an RB1. It wasn't pretty at times, but over the long haul, you got him for an RB3 price. That's what we're going to get Ronald Jones for. I like it, Tags.
But with Mark Ingram, I mean, you had such a history where he had produced with the Saints. We don't have that big of a sample size of Ronald Jones producing yet. I agree that he looked good this season.
Well, that's fair, but we have the film, and he's a better running back than Mark Ingram. We could see him becoming a Mark Ingram.
I don't know that I agree that he's a better running back than Mark Ingram, though.
Oh, man, I think his tape pops. He breaks so many tackles.
I won't say that, but he is a better pass catcher than people give him credit for, so this is another stat I came across. This is what happens when we have actual time after the season. There were 64 running backs who ran at least 100 routes in 2019, 64 of them. The top 5 in yards per route run were Austin Ekeler, DeAndre Washington, Dalvin Cook, James White, and Ronald Jones.
Sounds about right to me, man. Okay, let's move on over to the wide receiver position. And obviously, we're taking Michael Thomas at the top, but just how far up? I've got him number three right now behind Saquon Barkley. Justin, where do you have him?
I have Michael Thomas at five. I have him just a little bit lower. I know he's such a sure thing that you want to move him a little higher. And in PPR, I would move him up there. But if we're talking about half PPR, I have him just a couple spots lower because I want to get one of those top running backs now. And it's funny because my strategy for years was I was going wide receiver heavy early. And that's kind of switched. I want to make sure that in those first two rounds, I'm getting a running back that I'm very confident in. And if I have to wait on my second running back...
It's so much different now because you've got 10 teams who use like three running backs.
Yeah, if I have to wait on my second running back, I'm willing to do that. But receiver, and we're going to talk about it right now, it's very deep. We saw all these youngsters come on this year and have breakout seasons and really emerge as big-time stars. So there's a lot of players you're going to be able to get at that position in the second, third, fourth, fifth, maybe even later. And we saw that last year in the draft as well. And hopefully people were able to hit on some of those guys because they probably led them to fantasy titles if they did.
Tags, you were talking about how, you know, you're building your wide receiver rankings and you're like, wait a second, I've got Sammy Watkins at number 49. Like, that seems way too low, but then it's like, well, who am I going to move him over? There's just so many wide receivers.
Well, even like guys like Marvin Jones at 44, I felt like that was like way too low for him. And I'm like, but I'm not going to put him over some of these other guys. Like, I have Mike Williams at 41, the guy that just had a 1,000-yard season. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. There were over 30 wide receivers that had 100-plus targets this year. And, I mean... Michael Thomas, I'm not taking him at three. I'm gonna explain this real quick. The reason why Michael Thomas at three makes little sense to do is because if you grab him at three, you're relying on a running back, a workhorse running back, to fall back to you at the end of the second round, which is very, very unlikely. You're probably going to be looking at someone like a Todd Gurley. I think best case scenario, maybe Josh Jacobs falls to you at the end of the second, but a lot of people are high on him. And I don't think you want to rely on that player for your RB1 if you don't. So basically for me, Michael Thomas is right around that fifth, sixth pick. Maybe he's not going to fall to seven, but fifth or sixth, because then you're at least in the middle of the second round where you might have a shot at someone like Aaron Jones or Joe Mixon. But those guys are not going to fall to the end of the second. So that's basically where I'm at. And the reason, it has nothing to do with Michael Thomas. I think that there's wide receivers you can get that are better. So if you grab, let's say you take Ezekiel Elliott over Michael Thomas in, you know, in that five spot, let's say that's where he goes. And then you get back in the second round and you're staring at maybe Tyreek Hill. He's there. I would rather take Ezekiel Elliott and Tyreek Hill over Michael Thomas and maybe someone like a Todd Gurley or Josh Jacobs.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, after Michael Thomas, there's a group of six wide receivers that I'd love to have. Adams, Hopkins, Julio, Tyreek Hill, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans. But the thing is, there's not a single one of those guys I would take over my number 11 running back, Josh Jacobs. Would you guys agree with that? Like, do we need to go out and get that running back even over the number two wide receiver, Justin?
I think because, like we're talking about with these two rounds, a lot's going to change, obviously, for ADP before the season comes back. But I think in that range, I would still go with those receivers that are more sure things at the top, because I think in that second round, you're going to be able to get one of those guys you mentioned, whether it's Fournette or Henry or Jacobs, or you're going to be able to get another running back. So I actually like going wide receiver maybe near the end of that first round, those guys that you mentioned, like Julio Jones and Tyreek Hill. I wouldn't leave them on the board much longer than that.
Hey, so for those of you guys who don't know, or maybe you didn't play DFS all season, it's playoff time and your fantasy football season's over, so you might as well try DFS now. And we have a podcast coming out this week where we're going to be talking about the second week of the playoffs for DFS. The bad news is there's only a few more weeks left in the football season, but the good news is you can still get your fantasy fix with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football. And if you've never played before, there's even more time to celebrate. You can play for a $1 million top prize this weekend. You draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch means so much more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. You just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at $1 million top prize. Plus, all new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with throughout the playoffs. With only the best football teams left, there's no better time to start playing. Download the DraftKings app now and use code FANTASYPROS, all one word. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500 on your next deposit. Remember, that's code FANTASYPROS, and you can get a deposit bonus up to $500 only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, guys, let's keep moving on to this third tier, because I think Michael Thomas is in a tier of his own. I'm looking at Odell Beckham here. Some big question marks. Allen Robinson flashes at times as one of the best wide receivers in football, but he's tied to Mitch Trubisky. How do you feel about these two wide receivers, Tags?
I am going to be back in on Beckham. I'm not going to let 1 year dictate how I feel about him as a receiver. I know how talented he is.
Like, would you draft him over Devontae Parker, DJ Moore?
Yes, I would draft him over those guys. I mean, if Freddie Kitchens was there, I said absolutely not. And basically, I was going to be out on Beckham and say that Freddie Kitchens just doesn't know how to run an offense, and like he didn't adapt anything. So I'm really curious to see what they do. Head coach there in Cleveland, but it's got to be better than Kitchens, right? It still does depend on who they bring in there, but I mean, thinking about it, it's like, are you going to take guys like Amari Cooper over Odell Beckham? He comes with some skeletons of his own. Chris Godwin had a breakout season. We know that. Mike Evans has always been dependable. You can make the argument that those guys should go over Beckham. That's fine.
So you have Beckham at 8 then?
I have Beckham at 6.
Oh, ooh, dang.
Wow.
His ECR is 11. Dude, you are crazy.
I'm willing to bet on a guy that has elite talent that's proven it year over year, and it's like 1 year off. And we saw, by the way, if we go back...
And Baker Mayfield was quite good at the end of the year.
Well, if we go back to 2018 and bring up Jarvis Landry, he was one of the least efficient wide receivers in all of football. He was terrible. And it was his first year with Baker Mayfield, so maybe there was something with developing chemistry, whereas Odell Beckham didn't have it, and now you've seen Landry kind of skyrocket this year in terms of his efficiency. He was off the charts. So... Beckham in a year or two, maybe. I don't know if this hernia thing was, if there was any legitimacy to it, whatever. I don't really care. What I do know is that Freddie Kitchens is terrible and that Baker Mayfield's not. And Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham are going to be two of my biggest bounce back candidates. And granted, you don't have to spend, you know, a high second round pick to get Beckham now, and that's awesome. But to get someone like of his talent caliber at the end of the second, beginning of the third is kind of ridiculous. So yeah, I will absolutely take two running backs and then take Beckham as my wide receiver one.
I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of Beckham next year, but man, Tags, that's pretty high. By the way, Baker Mayfield had more fantasy points in the second half than Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers. He got it together.
Dan, I think he was like QB8 over the second half of the season, something like that. It was like shockingly high. For Beckham, for me though, like I do a column where it's, I do a bounce back candidates one. I also do a risky picks column, and he is definitely going to be in that column next year, because I think, especially if you're talking about taking him in the second round, there is so much risk there. And I don't want to just have recency bias. Like you said, Tags, it's one season, but I'm just a little bit worried. Not that he's going to completely fall off the cliff, but I don't know that I feel as strongly about him as I feel about a guy like DJ Moore or even Amari Cooper. I know the home road splits are weird, but he was another guy that was hurt this season down the stretch. But he still had a pretty good year, far better than Beckham. And I think when you're talking about Jarvis Landry, I think the biggest thing that helped Landry was that Beckham was there. And I think he's better suited as a second receiver, as playing second fiddle in an offense, as opposed to being the main guy, which he didn't really thrive when he got put in that role. And then when Beckham was there to take some of the attention away, all of a sudden we see Landry kind of pop back up. I think DJ Moore is a guy that we should be talking way more about, though. I don't know how people aren't more excited about him. Like, to have the season that he had with Kyle Allen at quarterback, 87 catches, over 1,100 yards. The biggest thing for him was that he only scored 4 touchdowns, but I kind of consider that a good thing, because for fantasy points, people are going to look at it and say, oh, maybe we didn't have as good of a year, but we know how volatile touchdowns can be. I think he's going to come back. He's going to have a big season. We don't know what they're going to do at quarterback. We didn't talk much about Cam Newton, but in that offense, you have Matt Rhule coming in. It is very exciting to own DJ Moore, in my opinion. So, and if you get a healthy Cam Newton, which I can't imagine that they're going to get rid of Cam Newton. I don't know who else they're going to pivot to if they got rid of Cam. So if you have a healthy Cam coming back, and I mean, before the injuries, late last season, he had the shoulder issue. Obviously this year, the foot problems. But let's remember, last year before the shoulder issue, Cam Newton was the QB3 in fantasy, right? So he can still get it done. They have great weapons there. DJ Moore, to me, more than any of these young guys, stepped up and proved himself. I see him as a wide receiver one. I think he's locked in, and I'm very excited to own him anywhere I can next year.
I love DJ Moore. I don't know how you can't, but I like A.J. Brown better, guys. I think he's a better wide receiver.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're different types of receivers for sure, but I think Brown has more of like the prototypical number one wide receiver traits that can be like an alpha, where DJ Moore, he's a possession style receiver. DJ Moore's comp for me coming out of college was like a Julian Edelman type player. And I still feel pretty confident about that. The coaching change does shake up things a little bit, not knowing. I don't think Cam Newton's very good. And I'm going to be clear about that. That's why I have DJ Moore and Allen Robinson right next to each other. I worry about their quarterback situations, and that's why I have them behind guys like Amari Cooper, like Odell Beckham, Godwin, Mike Evans. They're right in that next tier with guys like Juju Smith-Schuster, where these guys are uber talented. Like, they're fantastic, right? But you have concerns about their quarterback situations. And can we guarantee that DJ Moore is going to see 140 targets next year like we can with Allen Robinson if he's healthy? I don't know if we can. Should he? Yes, absolutely, he should. But it's like, that's the tier of wide receivers that I'd prefer not to have as my wide receiver one. Ideally, they're your number two, but if you're going to go running back heavy and take two running backs, yeah, you could fall back on them as your wide receiver one and feel good about it.
I want to go back to Odell Beckham just really quick, okay? So DeAndre Hopkins in 2015, wide receiver six. 2016, played a full season, wide receiver 38. What do you do the next year, guys? Wide receiver one. That can happen with Beckham.
Like I said, I mean, we have an elite talent that showed us time and time and again. Like, on a per-game basis, now he has dealt with some injuries, and that's something you have to factor into, but on a per-game basis, he was the best fantasy wide receiver in NFL history coming into this year. And that was playing with Eli Manning, and maybe we underrated Eli Manning and what he can do for a fantasy player, but at the same time, you know, it wasn't like a one-year sample size I was going off with Odell Beckham. It was, you know.
And he's still young enough, he can get better, too.
That's where I'm at. And Baker Mayfield's going to get better as he goes on. A new offense is going to help. These guys are going to get their swag back, essentially. They lost it this year. And it's going to come back. And like I said, if you want to draft guys like Chris Godwin, Mike Evans over him, that's fine. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that's wrong. But to say that Beckham isn't even in the discussion with those guys, I think is wrong.
Guys, I have a handful of wide receivers that are just giving me the biggest headache ever. I just lumped them all together because I don't know what to do with any of them. You guys tell me. AJ Green, Cortland Sutton, Terry McLaurin, DJ Chark, Cooper Kupp. What do we do with these five? Well, Justin, why don't you take your stab at a couple first?
That is a big list there. I think Cortland Sutton, I have him as a low-end wide receiver one. I have him not far behind. I have two spots behind Beckham. I mean, he's another guy that when you look at what DJ Moore did, I mean, Sutton had a similar situation where he put up big numbers. He had almost as good of a season, 72 grabs, also over 1,100 yards. He had six touchdowns, and he was catching passes from Joe Flacco and Brandon Allen and a pretty green Drew Lock right now. Locke probably going to be a little more prepared next year. I don't love the overall offensive situation, but Sutton was just an absolute force. He only really had one bad game all season. It was against Trey White of the Bills, and I don't think we're going to fault him for that at all. So all these guys, like I said, all these young guys that were coming on, whether it be DJ Moore or Cortland Sutton or AJ Brown, who we probably didn't talk enough about a second ago. I mean, all those guys for me are in that low-end wide receiver one, high-end wide receiver two, and they all prove themselves that there could be dominant players moving forward.
Tags, why don't you take your stab at AJ Green?
AJ Green.
I know you want to.
I love AJ Green, and I have him at 17. I have him actually sandwiched right in between Cortland Sutton and AJ Brown. So he's right in that tier with those guys.
He's always been a wide receiver one when he's healthy, right? Always. With Andy Dalton.
He is getting older, so I can't discount that, and I also can't discount the fact that he's probably not going to see 150, 160 targets again because, you know, Tyler Boyd does demand targets. John Ross established himself in the Zach Taylor offense. You know, works.
Well, is he even going to be in Cincinnati? Maybe he's with Green Bay. AJ Green.
Oh, they're franchise tagging him. He's coming back. I don't see a situation where AJ Green. Now, obviously, if he goes somewhere else, there's other factors to go into it, like playing with a quarterback for the first time and not having any chemistry. There's things that can play into it, but I expect him to be back in Cincinnati. It just seems like they're dead set on that. Otherwise, they would have traded him at the trade deadline. But Cortland Sutton, I do like him. He's like a high floor option. I worry about his ceiling in terms of what he can bring. That Vic Fangio team, it's a very old school team where I just don't know if they're ever going to get to a point where they're throwing the ball 600 times. And that's going to limit the potential for someone like Cortland Sutton. And I also don't know if Drew Lock or Joe Flacco, whoever the quarterback is going to throw for more than like 22 touchdowns, which obviously like you factor in all this stuff. Cortland Sutton is... That guy can lead the NFL in touchdowns. Absolutely can. But I have him at wide receiver 16, so I feel like he's someone that if you have him as your wide receiver 2, you should feel really good about it. But Terry McLaurin is someone I'm a little bit more worried about, just with Dwayne Haskins not knowing what you're getting there.
He's so good, man. He is so good.
Oh, he's fantastic. But you have to take into consideration, like, look at Juju Smith-Schuster this year. How do you guys feel about him? Like, now that if Ben Roethlisberger comes back, I have him at wide receiver 12. Like, I have to feel like...
Oh, what?
Yeah, that's the... I don't know why people are falling off so much. Like, quarterback... Quarterbacks matter so much, and Deontay Johnson showed that he's a player. So it's not like, oh, Juju, we stopped Juju and we stopped their entire passing attack. Juju's going to play the slot a lot, and that's really tough to avoid him. I would take Juju Smith-Schuster. If Ben Roethlisberger is back and healthy, I would take Juju over someone like Kenny Golladay.
Okay, I think you're crazy now.
Well, I think that shows you moving forward here. Like, because we have the whole offseason, I agree. There's a lot of these guys like Juju Smith-Schuster. I have him a little lower. I have him as sort of that fringe wide receiver two range, but he has that kind of upside. AJ Green, it is possible AJ Green comes back and is a wide receiver one in fantasy. Like, that's within his range of outcomes for sure. But right now I'm kind of holding off and kind of hedging a little bit, having him in that wide receiver three range, which is way, way lower than you have him tagged. So I think there's going to be a lot of movement, and it just shows how much people have to pay attention to the news throughout the offseason, have to pay attention to free agency, the draft. It's this time of year when you can get such an advantage on your league mates as opposed to just waiting until August. And the people who are listening right now know that because they're listening and it's January. But if you wait until August and try to catch up on this stuff, you're just so far behind. Whereas if you follow the news and you follow all the moves throughout free agency and the draft and everything, you're getting that news right away. I love, though, Bobby, that you brought up DJ Chark in that group, because I was going to ask you guys about DJ Chark, because he was one that I had no idea how to rank him. I mean, 73 receptions.
We don't even know who's starting in Jacksonville next year.
He goes over 1,000 yards. He has 8 touchdowns. Looks incredibly impressive in the first half of the season. In the second half of the year, I think he was dealing with injuries, right? Because he only hit 75 yards like once down the stretch. But you could make an argument. He's another guy where you could argue he should be a high-end wide receiver too. And I have him more in the low-end wide receiver two range. He really made such a leap in that second season. It was impressive, but what can we expect from this Jaguars offense? It's just such a question mark. So what do you guys think? I want to know, because I'm not really sure what to do with him myself.
I've got him low-end wide receiver too, with quite a bit of upside. I could see him slipping into the top 12 wide receivers, similar to Cortland Sutton. And I think Cortland Sutton's like a replica of Alshon Jeffrey, right? Alshon was a top 12 wide receiver in 2013, 2014. I don't think he can be a top 5 guy, but they're very similar types of players. Big guys, super quick, and get open.
I'm a little torn on Chark. I feel like once teams kind of figured out who he was in that offense and what he meant and the type of player that he can be, I feel like things came down a little bit more down to earth for him, where it's like, you know, in 4 of the first 5 games, he scored 18 plus PPR points. And then you look at the rest of the season, and there was, I think, 3 games the remainder of the year where he had more than 11 PPR points. So, like, I know he dealt with an injury in there, and then they went back to Foles, and they went back to Minshew, and I just don't know where the state of this team is right now. Chark, it's almost, I feel like he's best suited as a wide receiver 3. You kind of treat him as like a Will Fuller, as you would, where he has potential to be more. Like, he's going to get targeted a little bit more than someone like Will Fuller, but he is chasing that big play a little bit, where that's what they're kind of using him for in the offense. I'm torn. I think I would rather have someone like DK Metcalf, because at least I know that DK is tied to Russell Wilson, an elite quarterback, some consistency, you know. I think that it's possible that DK or Decaf Metcalf, whatever you want to call him, that he surpasses Tyler Lockett as the number one wide receiver on that team. I think it's very possible. So DK I have at 26. I have Chark at 29. DK I want to move up more, but I just can't bring myself. I can't put him above guys like Adam Thielen quite yet. I can't put him above Devontae Parker. And that's another thing. Devontae Parker, I want to love this guy. People are telling me, the Devontae Parker lover. I've been a Parker supporter forever, telling me that I'm too low on him. And I'm like, guys,
he was a top 12 wide receiver, Tags. Is he going backwards?
We don't know what's happening with the quarterback situation. Like, are they going to draft a quarterback? Are they going to go up to get Tua? I don't know what they're doing here. I mean, is Fitzpatrick back? And if Fitzpatrick is back, I'll think about it. Firing your offensive coordinator does not help. Like, I hate that they did it. I thought it was very uncalled for. So there's some variables with Parker that have me kind of like leaning on that, but really it's so tough right now. At this point in the offseason, like, we do have coaching changes. We do have free agency coming up. We do have the draft coming up. We have quarterback changes. There's a lot of guys that are unrestricted free agents that are going to shake up things. So it's tough for me to, I have Parker at 23, and I feel like it is probably too low, but I don't know who I put him over.
All right, one more guy I want to talk about, Cooper Kupp. Justin, why don't you take your stab at him? I mean, he finished as the number six fantasy wide receiver because he was so good in the first half, but man, did he fall off.
Yeah, this is an offense that I want to go back and look at that passing game. And like I said, we're going to go over so much data throughout the offseason. One of the things I want to dig deep on is what happened to this passing game. And then more specifically, what happened to Cooper Kupp? Because yeah, he was playing so well and then completely fell off a cliff. Now,
he finished behind Kendrick Bourne in the second half, guys.
Yeah, and they completely flipped the offense where Robert Woods operated as the number one receiver in the second half of the season. And that was great. We talked about my dynasty team earlier. Robert Woods, like my fourth receiver on that team. So that was fantastic for me. And Robert Woods was getting all the volume. He had at least nine targets in each of the last seven games, right? Like that's crazy volume. And all of a sudden, Cooper Kupp just became an afterthought. I don't have the answer yet. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not someone, you guys know me by now. I'm not someone that comes on podcasts and throws out, you know, wild takes on anything. If I don't know, I'll tell you that I don't know. And I really don't know what happened to him, but I'm going to find out at some point in this offseason.
Yeah. Why don't you guys each give me one more wide receiver, maybe outside the top 25 ECR. You'd be really excited to get next season. Tags, why don't you go first?
DK was one of those guys, but I'll go a little bit deeper and I'll say Marquise Brown. I've talked about pass catchers and like whether it be tight ends or wide receivers, doesn't matter. If you have foot surgery in a season, like wait a full calendar year before drafting them. And that's where I was at with Marquise Brown. I took a stab on a few best ball drafts, but I was really worried about him. And then he blows up at the start of the year, and then he starts dealing with some ankle injuries, and it may be, you know, something stemming from that Lisfranc surgery that he had. But knowing that he's going to have a full offseason to work with Lamar Jackson, knowing that Lamar Jackson is getting better as a passer, that Marquise Brown should be running more routes, there's a lot of things to look forward to. And he's someone that, you know, when comping players, he reminded me so much of DeSean Jackson.
Right, who was the number four fantasy receiver in 2009, and he's playing with an MVP.
Yeah, and if Lamar Jackson keeps taking a step forward as a passer, like he did this year, and Brown gets healthier, and they develop some rapport, because again, they didn't have really much of an offseason together because he was rehabbing from that foot surgery. So Marquise Brown is someone that I am particularly high on.
So I like Mike Williams. I like Anthony Miller. The guy I want to get into, though, is a better version of Marquise Brown. Tags, who am I talking about?
Are you talking about Robbie Anderson?
No, man, get out of here. It's Hardman for the Chiefs. He plays with Patrick freaking Mahomes, too. If he gets in the starting lineup, dude's a league winner.
Could be. Volume may be a problem, so he's going to be a little bit inconsistent. And that's what we've seen from the other receivers in that offense, not named Tyreek Hill, right? That they've all, because Travis Kelce's there, because Tyreek Hill's the top guy. Even when Hill was out, we didn't see anyone really put up consistent numbers, so it was kind of strange, but... I'm not as high, but I'll tell you what, I didn't even know you're going to ask this question, Bobby. I went through my list and highlighted a bunch of guys and tags. I had Marquise Brown as one of the guys highlighted, and Bobby, I had Mecole Hardman highlighted too. So I think you guys are on the right track.
Nice.
All right, guys, let's go to the quarterback position then. And, you know, I don't really want to go through this extensively because I think a lot of us believe, you know, draft a quarterback late, whoever falls. Tags and I have already talked about this with Lamar Jackson. We'd take him in the late second round.
I would take him early second. I've come around.
Early second, okay. Yeah, I mean, he was just so much better than anyone else. You're getting an RB1 and a QB1. Justin, how high would you take Lamar Jackson?
I'm with you guys, and I did not expect that I would say this about any quarterback ever again. Like, what we saw from Mahomes last year, I was like, even that is just outrageous.
Yeah, like he was a late third round, early fourth round guy at tops.
And then you have Lamar Jackson come out and he plays one less game and he ends up putting up more fantasy points than Mahomes had last year. Now, it's a completely different situation. Obviously, the rushing stats were completely historical, right? Like, just killed it. We knew that it was possible. I don't think any of us expected it to be as good as it was. But the thing with Lamar Jackson that gets me excited, last year, we talked about the TD regression that was going to come for Patrick Mahomes, and it did. And you want to argue, you know, there were injuries and stuff that factored in. Okay, but he put up less touchdowns this year. If you're worried about any sort of regression coming from Jackson, I'm not, because you know how they say, you know, we use like 10% of our brains or whatever it is. This offense, this passing game, they're barely using, you know, 60%, I would say, of the potential that this passing attack has. And he's already putting up these kind of numbers. You just talked about Marquise Brown, how much better he could get. Miles Boykin, I think, is someone that I'm still pretty excited about. We've seen him pop up, score a couple touchdowns here and there. But the passing attack could get so much better next season as teams, maybe even down the playoff stretch here.
He only threw the ball 401 times, Justin.
Exactly. And as teams try to come up with ways to stop that rushing attack, to stop him specifically running the ball, they're going to be able to throw even more. And I think he's going to have more success there as well. So it's just such an exciting player to own. Injury is always going to be a worry for any running quarterback. And I know he seems to avoid big hits. Like, you know, somebody like Robert Griffin took a lot of hits back in his day. I don't think that Lamar Jackson really gets popped as much, but still, when he's running the ball, he could take the wrong kind of shot and he could miss time. That's always going to be there. And if that happens, you're in trouble. But I would be willing to spend up for him because, like you said, you're kind of getting two players in one and he's a complete league winner. You have him on your team. I am so upset in my main league this year. I had a chance to trade for him. I could have traded Robert Woods early in the year to get him. And I was Robert Woods is too valuable. I'm not going to pay that for a quarterback. Never. And it was like week two or week three. And, you know, that at that point, we still weren't sure because Jackson had played really easy opponents. Well, guess what? It really made the difference come playoff time because the guy who beat me in the playoffs, the guy who won the title,
Lamar Jackson.
The guy that traded for Lamar Jackson earlier in the season. So, yeah, it's a guy that I think you have to be willing to spend. I think I wouldn't be shocked if a lot of people even go first round. I wouldn't do that. But I think there's a chance we see his ADP get that high.
I think his ADP will be first round. Now, Tags, we're going to hear this over and over again. He had a 9.0% touchdown rate. Of course that's going to come crashing down. I'm not going to argue with that. There's no doubt about it. It always happens. But if he loses those passing touchdowns, where are they going to go? They're going to turn into rushing touchdowns for him, right?
Yep. I mean, Mark Ingram scored double-digit touchdowns. Like, I think he scored, was it 10 or 11 rushing touchdowns? So it's not like Mark Ingram was, like, snubbed or anything like that. This offense is just, I mean, that's why I've picked the Ravens to win the Super Bowl. This is like before anything started with the Patriots losing, the Saints losing. I did pick Ravens versus Saints in the Super Bowl, so that sucks. But I just don't see any way that you stop this offense right now. And like as you mentioned, Marquise Brown coming back healthy. Miles Boykin is a bigger bodied wide receiver that they're hoping that can develop into a full-time player. Mark Andrews has been banged up all season long, and he's only a second-year tight end. I mean, Hayden Hurst has proven to be a fine number two tight end for them. If they involve Justice Hill in the passing game a little bit, he provides more of a spark than Mark Ingram or Gus Edwards does. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to see more pass attempts out of Jackson. I don't think he's going to set the record again for rushing, but if you're like legitimately, if you were to tell me that Lamar Jackson plays all 16 games, I would legit bet a lot of money saying that he scores the most fantasy points of any quarterback. So when you remove injury from the equation, he would be worth a middle. Like I would say I would take him as like the number 7 overall player if I knew he was going to be healthy the entire season.
So Tags, last year, or I guess this year that we're just now finishing, we were telling people if you're waiting on a quarterback, you take Jameis Winston or Lamar Jackson. Who's that guy for you this year? I'm not waiting that long because I want either Josh Allen or Kyler Murray.
Baker?
Okay. What about you, Justin? Which direction are you going?
If you're going real deep, I would take my shot on Baker. I would take a shot on Cam Newton, like we talked about earlier. I think I'm pretty excited about what could happen in that offense. I think there's a lot of potential, and I like what the staff is doing. I mean, as a Bills fan, seeing a competent coaching staff come in and really change the organization's direction completely, we could be seeing that in Carolina right now, having a new kind of offensive-minded coaching staff come in, and they could do some really interesting things. I'm with you, though, with Kyler Murray. I have him pretty high, but I think everyone's going to be excited about him just because I think he profiles very similar. He could have that kind of Lamar Jackson jump in his second year, right? I think that kind of thing is possible for him. But it was a great first season when you're talking about what Murray did this year. I mean, completed over 64% of his passes, threw 20 touchdowns, and then ran for 500 yards and another 4 scores there. And when you look at the supporting cast that he did it with, they're not that impressive at all, right? So we could see some upgrades to that offensive line. We could see some better weapons come in around him. Maybe it could be Andy Isabella. Maybe it could be Hakeem Butler, who I liked a lot last year. Maybe to those guys. Or they could go out and get someone else, whether in free agency or the draft. But I think the smart move for them would be what we saw the Bills do, which was surround Josh Allen with a lot of talent going into his second season, revamping the offensive line, bringing in a legit number one weapon there in the passing game. And I hope that they're going to do that in Arizona for Murray because he could end up as a top 2 or 3 quarterback in fantasy. I have him ranked right now as QB6. So I haven't really looked at ECR that much to see where I am against that. But I would be willing to take him pretty much anywhere that he's going in drafts unless he gets really, really high up.
I'm glad you brought up Andy Isabella because he's my Devontae Parker this year, the guy that I'm going to take at the very end of drafts and hope that he breaks out. I definitely think that he could in that offense. Now, guys, let's go to the tight end position, and we're going to touch on this quickly before we get to our NFL predictions. It's so weird because last year it was like, you either draft one of these top five tight ends, and one of them was O.J. Howard, another one was Hunter Henry who got hurt, or you're absolutely screwed. This year I'm looking at it, I'd be comfortable with 10, 11 tight ends on the board right now. Do you guys feel the same way? And Tags, who are you targeting at this point, or is it just whoever falls to you in the right range? I like Tyler Higbee.
I'm probably not taking a tight end early, and it's probably whoever falls, because again, if you play in a 12-team league, you can get to the point where it's like you just wait until you see seven or eight tight ends off the board and then grab one, so you're not stuck, you know, with someone like TJ Hockenson and relying on a breakout, or a Jonnu Smith, where these are guys that could potentially break out, but I don't think you want to put them in your lineup every single week. Streaming the position always makes sense. So, I mean, if you want to, Evan Engram, I have as my number eight tight end, which is kind of crazy, but I mean, that's where he kind of falls. I mean, are you going to take him over someone like Hunter Henry, Austin Hooper, or Mark Andrews? I don't think so. I mean, Darren Waller, based on what people have told me about my ranking on him, I'm probably going to end up with some Darren Waller because I have him as my number three tight end above Zach Ertz, because I do believe that we see Dallas Goedert take a step forward and Ertz, I mean, you guys didn't forget like the first half of the season this year, right? Where Ertz, it was almost like he started losing some of that upside, and then it came, and it's because they didn't have any pass catchers. You know, they're going to have more pass catchers, I wonder.
Yeah, DeSean Jackson comes back, Alshon comes back, you're right. And Zach Ertz is going to be 30 years old.
Exactly. So these things are starting to add up, and Waller was about as safe as they come at the tight end position. He didn't score as many touchdowns as maybe he should have, but I'm not going to argue if you want to take Ertz over Waller, but I think they're in the same tier.
Well, and Waller steps right into that Jared Cook role, right, as basically the de facto number one receiver in that Raiders offense. And I'm with you with Ertz. That's a situation where you can be right and wrong on a prediction, because before the season, I said with all these weapons, with Goddard coming on, that he just wasn't going to see the same kind of volume this season, especially when it came to the red zone. And like you said, in the first half of the year, that was true. And then when everybody got hurt, he kind of fell back. I still think that Ertz is going to be a top five, maybe top six tight end. And I do have him above Waller. I have them both very close. I have Mark Andrews, actually, as the guy that's above Ertz in my rankings right now.
Like, imagine if he plays more than 35% of the snaps in a game, right?
Yeah, right? Like, exactly. Like, the fact that he only played over 50% of the snaps, we're talking about Mark Andrews, obviously, that he only played over 50% of the snaps in, like, six games, I think it was, this year. You know, there's such, going back to the Ravens offense, going back to that passing game, there's so much potential still, even with as good as that offense has been. But yeah, there's that clear top two, Kittle and Kelsey, whether you're willing to pay for them or not. I'll give an example of a little draft strategy. In my one keeper league that I'm in, there were two teams that sold off last year, so they had a ton of early picks. They were clear favorites. They were going to be juggernauts this season. So I was trying to figure out ways that I could get a bit of an advantage, or at least make up some ground on them. And quarterback, obviously, is one of them. You can wait on quarterback forever. But really, I think tight end is almost like that now. You have to hit on the guy. But what I did was I waited until the very last rounds of the draft, and I drafted a couple guys with some upside, and I got lucky. I ended up hitting on Austin Hooper, who turned out, like I said, you have to hit on one of them. But this year, whether it was Waller or Hooper or Andrews, there were so many guys that popped up that now you're going to get a lot of value at tight end this year. So I do think if you're looking, you know, at a position that you can wait on and try to get value elsewhere and then come back to it, tight end is definitely one of those spots.
All right, guys, let's go to the playoffs for this weekend. And I'm just going to ask for your winners. And then afterwards, we'll get your Super Bowl picks as well. So let's start with the Saturday afternoon game. We have Minnesota at San Francisco. San Francisco's 7-point favorites. I think Minnesota can win this outright. I'm not saying they're the favorite by any means. I'm just saying with the way that the Minnesota Vikings defense has played over the last 2 months and the way the 49ers defense has played over the last 2 months, the Vikings defense has been substantially better in every single metric. And I think Kirk Cousins is a better quarterback than Jimmy G as well. I think they have a better running game with Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison. I think Minnesota could go into San Francisco and knock them off.
Bobby, I thought this was the part of the podcast where Tags and I were going to put our feet up, because I thought you're the guy who was in the betting accuracy. Didn't you finish right near the top? I think everybody wants to hear your take, no?
It's not done yet. I'm at number three right now out of, I don't know, like 150 or something. Last week, I did not do so well, though, so I don't know.
All right. Well, I still like that you're up near the top there. I think it's interesting that I don't remember who put it out on Twitter. I wish I could give them credit. But in the divisional round, road teams are 3-13 in the last 16 games. So I'm leaning a little more chalky this week. Not completely. There's one team that I think could get an upset, but it might be one that's a little obvious as well. But I think San Francisco's rested. Sounds like they're going to get some reinforcements back in this one. I mean, we're going to have to watch practice participation, but Kwon Alexander could make it back for this game. It seems like it's trending that way. And the 49ers are just a better coach team here. I have them winning it. I think they're going to take it.
Tags, I'm assuming you got the 49ers too.
Yeah, the Vikings is just too much. They traveled to New Orleans. They're going to be playing on only 5 days rest. They have to travel all the way to the West Coast. There's a lot of things factoring in against this. Dalvin Cook's coming off 31 touches. I don't know, man.
I think traveling to New Orleans is a lot tougher than traveling to San Francisco.
No, I'm saying like in terms of like travel time, like and what they're doing, and then like changing time zones, and traveling to the West Coast is never a good thing. I'm taking San Fran here.
Okay, so Ryan Tannehill, Lamar Jackson. Guys, you know Lamar Jackson's dealing with the flu right now. Does this make you think that maybe Tennessee has a chance? Ryan Tannehill was the number one quarterback in football in terms of efficiency from the time he took over, and Derrick Henry, the lead rusher. I don't know, guys. I mean, I think there's a chance here. I think it's not especially high. I'm definitely taking the Ravens, but with the spread at 9-5, I'm smashing the Titans this week.
Well, I would like to personally thank the Titans first, because as a Bills fan, after watching them lose last week, it was a nice little consolation prize to watch the Patriots go down later that day. But I don't think the Titans have enough magic to make this one happen. I don't know how sick Lamar Jackson would have to be before I would actually start to get interested in the Titans here. I think the Ravens are going to win this one pretty handily. I think that I would imagine they're going to win by double digits in this game.
Oh, you've got them covering the spread then. Okay, Tags. Which I know you're taking the Ravens, but which side of the spread are you taking?
It's really difficult for me to lay double-digit points, essentially, in a playoff game, especially the divisional round. The wild card round, it's like some teams sneak in that shouldn't be there. But coming off that win, it's really difficult for me to give 9.5 points. And honestly, we pick the games and we choose which ones we pick and whatnot. I did not put in a pick for this game because I just don't feel confident either way, because I could see Baltimore winning by double digits, as Justin said, but it's difficult to lay that many points in a playoff game. So if I had to pick, I guess I would side getting 9.5 points in a playoff game, but I don't feel comfortable doing it.
All right, let's go Sunday. We get the afternoon game. Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, 9.5-point favorites. I think this is the easiest one on the slate. In terms of spread and game line, I'm taking the Chiefs over 9.5.
Yeah, I mean, the Texans barely got by the Bills, and I know that they spent big this year. They were trying to make it happen, all that draft capital that they gave up. They're still a flawed team, though, and the Chiefs are getting healthy at the right time now. I mean, we saw Damian Williams, you know, even if you think that they're going to replace him in the offseason, which they definitely probably will, he stabilizes that backfield from what we saw for most of the year when he was hurt there, when you have kind of the group doing it, and they weren't really getting it done as a group. Then you see Williams come back, and he kind of opens up the passing game, especially, you know, out of the backfield. He gives them a little something extra, that versatility as a pass catcher. I think it's going to be a shootout, and I'm actually kind of excited for this game because I think they're just going to have to unleash Deshaun Watson and see if he can keep up here. But I know it's the highest projected game of the week. I think it's probably going to live up to that. But I think you're right, Bobby. I have the Chiefs rolling in that one.
I disagree with that, actually. I've got the under hard in this game because the Chiefs, a lot of people are not going to like to hear this, especially 49ers fans. Chiefs have the best defense left in the playoffs right now. They are on fire the last 2 months.
If you put a caveat of the Chiefs at home, maybe it's a good conversation there. I don't know if I would totally agree with the Chiefs being the best defense, but the Chiefs at home tend to play a lot better on defense.
I mean, they've given up 6 points, 17, 9, 16, 3, 3, 21. This defense is so good. And they've been getting like 5 sacks per game, too.
They're a lot better than people give them credit for. But this one, I mean, if Will Fuller is able to play, I'll take Houston plus 10. If you go back, I actually went back and rewatched that entire game they played earlier this year. And Deshaun Watson, his final numbers don't look very impressive, but he was very good in that game. And I'm not kidding. DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller dropped 4 touchdowns. 4. Like all 4 passes they dropped were all for touchdowns. Fuller was like, there was a 28-yard one, a 40-some-yard one, and then like a 31-yard touchdown. Like, it was kind of ridiculous. He continually got behind that defense, and Houston coming off, I mean, they may have got the monkey off their back last week, like winning that game, riding that high horse. Going into Kansas City is not easy, but that's what they did earlier this season. They won in Kansas City despite those mishaps that they had on offense. So I'm with Justin in the fact that I think this game is going to produce some fireworks, and I'll take Houston plus 10.
All right, guys, let's go to the Sunday evening game. We got the Packers and the Seahawks. It's in Green Bay. And Justin, it sounds like you're taking the Seahawks.
Yeah, spoiler. If you do the math there, this is the last game, right? So it's my lone upset for the week. I see them winning in Lambeau. I don't think the Packers impressed me that much down the stretch. They've just been grinding out these wins. And if that happens here, I think that's the kind of game that fits the Seahawks. They can kind of play that game and grind it out. And you don't want to go down narrative street, but I love that they brought back Marshawn Lynch. And it's not just because of what he brings on the field. It's kind of just the vibe that he can bring to that team. I think they're excited. They got some momentum now. It's going to be close till the end. I think this one's going to be a very, very close game. But I think Russell Wilson and his weapons are a little better than Aaron Rodgers and his at this point. I think they're going to get the win.
Now, Tags, you're going to get to go third because I want you to break the tie. I'm going with Green Bay. I've got Green Bay in the Super Bowl, and we'll get to that in just a second. But everyone talks about how Green Bay is the most overrated team in the playoffs. Guys, I think it's the Seahawks. Somebody posted this, 3rd and 16 on Twitter, posted, what would every team's records be if you flipped one possession games? Okay, so you've got the Chargers at 12-3, best record in football, right? Browns would have made the playoffs. Buccaneers would have made the playoffs. Guys, the Seahawks would have had the number one pick. You want to talk about eking out close games? That's the Seahawks. They've been doing it all year long. Their defense is wildly overrated. Yeah, they've got Russell Wilson. I like Marshawn Lynch. He's a lot of fun, but it's a downgrade from Chris Carson. Tyler Lockett hasn't been playing well since he had that injury. I think the Packers win this, and I think they win against the spread as well. Tags, you get to break the tie. Where are you going?
I think there's a reason that Seattle is that good in one-possession games because they're well-coached. I think Pete Carroll's a much better coach than Matt LaFleur, and close games come down to better coaching. And I will take Pete Carroll over Matt LaFleur any day of the week. So I'm going to take Seattle plus the 4 points here. I think it's very possible Seattle wins this game outright. So I would side with Justin this one.
So I already mentioned I got Green Bay in the Super Bowl. I've also got Kansas City, and I've got Kansas City winning it. Which way are you going, Justin?
I think it's going to be a rematch of Super Bowl 47. I think it's going to be Ravens and 49ers. I mean, tons of storylines, tons of personalities. It would be really fun from that respect. But this is just the Ravens year. And I feel like we've talked about it so many. Every position we were talking about, we were talking about the Ravens, right? They've had a phenomenal season. They're the most complete team, in my opinion, top to bottom, barring injuries. And we talked about how Lamar Jackson, everything could change with one hit if Lamar Jackson goes down. But barring any injuries, we saw Mark Ingram's a little banged up here. I think they're going to be able to get over that one. And I mean, they might even be able to tap into some of their depth, maybe get Justice Hill more involved. I think he's pretty explosive.
Oh, please.
Exactly, right? We've been waiting for that all season.
That would be better than Mark Ingram, man.
Absolutely. So I think that's what's going to happen, and that's kind of what I hope happens too. And I know you shouldn't really make the prediction based on that, but those are the two teams that I think deserve it the most. And we'll see. Baltimore's got a lot of work to do over these next couple weeks, but I think they're going to cap off an amazing year for Lamar Jackson by hoisting that Lombardi Trophy.
Tags, you going with Justin? Same picks?
I actually do have the same picks. I debated Seattle over San Francisco because that's a divisional game. They've split the series this year. I think it's possible for Seattle to win that game, but at the same time, they've had enough injuries and still are dealing with injuries that are enough to push it over the edge while San Francisco is getting healthy at the right time. But yeah, I would. And so Baltimore versus San Francisco, and Baltimore wins it.
All right. Sounds good, guys. That's all for today's show. Justin, thank you so much for coming on. Always a lot of fun to talk to you. And man, I can't wait for 2020. But first, the playoffs are going to be awesome.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. And good luck the rest of the way in that betting accuracy, Bobby.
Oh, thank you. You as well. There's no chance I can get number one. He's so far ahead of everyone else. But number two is in sight. All right, and I want to say thanks to the sponsors of today's show, DraftKings. You download that DraftKings app now and use the code FANTASYPROS because for a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500 on your next deposit. Remember, that's code FANTASYPROS, and you can get that deposit bonus up to $500 only on DraftKings. And also Pristine Auction. Make sure to see what they have for you. You're going to love what you find. All kinds of great values. Everything's guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources. Again, that's pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. For Justin Boone and Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your football.
I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a pool full of your love. I don't even know how the chemistry works when your pool's out kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my! Look at that! He is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win! Unbelievable!
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full grate sear zone so you can put more food on the flame. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.